Chairman, as we see currently, it remains a crucial cornerstone and it remains a key guiding framework for DStv's ICT research development and innovation activities. What we do currently and in terms of our support and championing the R&D activities in the ICT space, the roadmap actually guides those activities and whatever priorities we set in that space. As a way of the rationale, when we developed the roadmap about 3 or 4 years ago, when we started with the actual development of the roadmap, the key issue that remained crucial was the fact that ICT remains a key guiding driver for socio-economic development. And this is evidenced by the study, which quite old now, but I think it's still relevant, when it was done in 2011, where it was determined that the internet economy itself is worth $59 billion, or was worth $59 billion in 2011. And that contributes to about 2% of the GDP. And that is only one aspect of ICT business. But most importantly, in developing the roadmap, we also took, guide from the National Development Plan, which envisions that by 2030, ICT will underpin a dynamic, inclusive information society and the knowledge economy. And therefore, we have a basis for, prioritizing ICT, in particular the R&D and innovation activities. This slide basically shows where we are in terms of our R&D and in comparison with other international or other countries, some of which are vulnerable in terms of the economies of Africa. This is the statistics that comes out of the annual R&D surveys that DST runs in a partnership with HSRC. But here we just look at the ICT aspect. And as you can see on the top row there, the investment in ICT R&D as a percentage of GDP in the latest statistics, the latest R&D survey shows that it stands at 0.065%. It was actually 0.12% in 2012. So it shows that this has been declining over the past 2 or 3 years. And if you look at comparable countries, I think the ratio there is quite high. I look at Korea, Brazil, which is one of our group's partners, much higher than us in terms of investment in ICT R&D, and then Australia and Taiwan and so on. So that picture shows that we really are lagging behind in terms of investment in ICT. And perhaps this is what, this is why, as we stand now, we are actually importing close to 10% of ICT, 10% of GDP on ICT goods and services, and which also impact on our technology balance of payment. That's negative figure. Therefore, ICT R&D intensity as a percentage of GDP has decreased over time, and we think the roadmap can help to turn that around. The value, the vision when we actually developed the ICT R&D roadmap, we came to this vision that we want to create a digital advantage for South Africa, which means that we envision a situation where we have overcome digital divide by leveraging advances in ICT to address socio-economic challenges, and therefore we shall have created digital advantage. And this will be done through investment and effective coordination of R&D activities across the whole system. And in doing so, the principal focus will be on satisfying the national needs. We'll also look at improving our export potential, as well as developing technologies with local customers in mind, but broadly looking at exporting in the near future. This slide basically represents what the roadmap is. In coming up with the roadmap itself, the idea was to look at you know, prioritizing the areas that will have the greatest impact. And this slide represents the thematic areas or the key priority areas, which we call market opportunities. In developing the roadmap, 27 of those were identified, and we clustered them into six groups, which we call clusters of market opportunities. If you look at the second row there, those are the six clusters, looking at broadband, infrastructure, ICT for development, sustainability and the environment, which looks at how ICT can support green economy. Grand science, meaning supporting, you know, or taking advantage of the opportunities provided by the mega science projects such as the SKA and so on. And we'll be leveraging ICT component of those mega science projects in order to create new industries and service capability. Industrial applications, how ICT can support other industries like mining, manufacturing, and so on. The service economy, looking at even areas around e-government, how we can bring the mobile services supporting government service delivery, or social development in general, looking at supporting education, and so on. Now, this slide basically frames the impact and how the activity in ICT R&D can help us realize impact. And if you look at the right end of the slide, we're looking at, say, the 14 outcomes of government as per the MTSF. But we say, if you look at the ICT R&D ecosystem, we have the research institutions performing research where the output will be technology and the expertise and the people, but also higher education in terms of academic training. You have trained people who can then, you know, get absorbed into government or into industry as employees, but also the technology can flow into government to support policy and strategy, and thus basically enhance service delivery. But as well as people going to industry and the products and the technology going into the industry and, you know, supporting the value chain, which ultimately leads to products and services that can then address the 14 outcomes in general. But in particular, in our case, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, skilled and capable workforce will be key in that respect. And if you can, as you can see, then the roadmap basically can support that configuration in order to enable us to reach that impact. Having had the cabinet approval of the roadmap in 2013, in April 2013, we have gained quite a lot of traction. The roadmap supports other government policies in ICT. In particular, this slide indicates how we have entrained the roadmap itself in the national broadband policy, South Africa Connect, which is led by the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. We're playing a key role there. In that policy, there's one strategic thrust that focuses on digital opportunity. I'll not talk about the others. But then that thrust basically recognized R&D and innovation and application development as key to enabling us, you know, to realize knowledge economy as an overall broader vision of the NDP. But in terms of the broadband policy, where access to ICT will be increased or enhanced, R&D will play a critical role in that space. Other areas in government, we are playing a critical role in supporting the Department of Education, in particular supporting them in their e-education white paper. We have currently, as I will show later, the demonstrator project which is being implemented in Niba district in the Kofimbaba. Niba second in Kofimbaba district in Eastern Cape, where we're rolling out tablets, but it's not only about rolling out tablets, about the models and the learning that comes out of that and the innovation in terms of how we create value from that intervention. So we're really getting quite interesting and exciting lessons around that. Department of Basic Education is on board. Provincial Department of Education is on board. So what will be happening now
is that this model will be transferred to the department, and we're looking at scaling up and rolling out province-wide. And the lessons coming out of that hopefully will help us to support the Department of Education in national rollout of the ICT in general. National Department of Health, through our agency, CSIR Meraka Institute, have the new diagnostic standards for addressing the disparate systems in the health sector. And then also the patient registration system, where about 38, the deployment happened in 38 facilities, which impact on about 328,000 patients as of September 2014. There's also a rolling operation for ATISA on the health side, that through our agencies we're helping in terms of coming up with the implementation plan around the ICT in the health sector. Now I'll continue to share a few of the achievements that we have realized since we started the implementation proper of the roadmap, starting in 2013-14 up to the current year in particular. But in doing so, I'll also highlight, you know, one of the key achievements in our view is through the roadmap, because it's a robust plan that we've come up with the involvement of all stakeholders, private and public sector. We managed to really leverage additional funding in the context of, you know, limited financial resources. We know that our fiscal is under heavy strain currently. So, but then we managed under those conditions to source other funding or to leverage other funding from other sources. For example, 15 million rand was secured over the next 3 years from the DPSA Green Fund. That's because of the realization that the roadmap is really a good implementation framework for ICT R&D, and people readily are willing to invest in that. We also secured 3 years funding of about 61.1 million from DST, other sources other than the ICT R&D, and 22 million from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reforms to implement it. This is part of the Tosimbaba project that I spoke about earlier. The 3 year ICT Latin Innovation Partnership was sourced from the Economic Competitiveness Support Package from National Treasury, 120 million from the EU General Budget Support. This will be focusing on innovation to support government service delivery. So there's targeted projects that will be coming out of that program. Most importantly, in terms of our partnership with multinational companies, we recently secured a joint investment of about 439 million from IBM, which will happen over the next 7 years, and Cisco for the establishment of R&D centers at West University and Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University. I'll talk a bit about this later in my later slides. This just shows the track record, but the message here is that really the initial investment in capability and critical mass when it supported masters and PhD students in the early years, you know, starting from, say, 2007 onwards, we have seen an increase in that critical mass, number of students coming, masters, PhDs, and also patents and technologies that come out of that investment. And as you can see, the slide shows, you know, an increase in terms of the output in that respect. If you look at the bottom graph where we really highlighting the actual masters and PhD students, as well as the publication equivalents and the technology demonstrators and the patents granted, you can see there's a steady increase in that respect. Also, the top graph there indicates the funding that we've been able to leverage, showing a steady increase over the years. The roadmap really positions us well to address national priorities via structured engagement with government departments. So that this slide shows a number of activities and broad government priorities and policies where we're participating. I spoke about broadband policy earlier on the TGPS. IDC is on board in helping us to commercialize some of the activities. We are tightly engaging them so that the technology that come out of research can actually go to the market. We'll see some spin-off companies coming out of that. We participate in the Presidential Infrastructure Commission, C15. SKA, I spoke about speaker on the Department of Rural Development, Health, Department of Environmental Affairs in terms of the green economy and so on. So there's quite a significant traction and alignment and buying from sister departments who basically are at the whole face of service delivery in many respects. This basically elaborates on the leverage funding that I spoke about from multinational companies. This is the three main ones that we have currently. We do have other smaller ones, Microsoft, which Nokia and other multinational companies, which we hope will grow also over time. But the big ones, IBM, as part of their BEE equity equivalent problem with the Department of Trade and Industry, they invested, or they committed to invest $700 million over the next 7 years. But part of that, and the major part of that, which is $373 million, will be for R&D. So that's where the partnership comes. And I spoke about that amount earlier on. Then, just to mention that this is actually the first in this program of the DTI. It happens with other companies that have a large procurement in South African government, where they have obligation to address this equity equivalent BEE policy. But most of them have not really focused on R&D, and it's the first that we have a focused R&D part of that investment. And I think it's quite significant for us. Cisco, with the Center for Broadband Communication at Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, the partnership started now in March 2015, and we're having that partnership where they'll be focusing on broadband and fiber networks. CERB, the main focus is on, you know, human capital development, supporting masters and PhDs. Lastly, the next few slides now in conclusion, Jefferson, is to share with you some of the achievements that we have realized over the past few years as a result of the roadmap. Just to illustrate the track record. If you look at the timeline, say from 2004-2005 up to now, when the DSD was really a young department after the separation from agriculture, when the TSD was created as a standalone department. You know, the focus on R&D was to build criticalness, so we supported the training of masters and PhD students with Meraka Institute, CSIR, but also linking with universities. And the latter years, 2010, 2013, that's when the development of the roadmap started. We conceptualized, but it started in proper in 2011. Until it was approved in 2013. So during this period, you know, the early years where it was just exploring, looking at donor funding, you know, very limited funding, but later on DSC invested, you know, a targeted program, for example, ICT for Education, which we called Building Critical Mass in ICT for Education. Now, over the past 3-4 years, the technology demonstrator that was about in Kofuba was conceptualized and started implementing in 2012-13 with a further 18 million investment, which led now to this impact that I spoke about. We had this large demonstrator tech for it. It includes other technologies, but the focus here is ICT. It includes other areas of energy, sanitation, and so on. So it's technology to support rural education, basically. But then in terms of ICT, this is the rollout of tablets, but it also includes connectivity, innovative energy solutions around that, how to power those tablets that are are provided. Now the impact is that 6,500 learners have been impacted today. 246 teachers trained and 16 district officials. And the rollout is really impressive, covering 26 schools in the Nueva district. I mean, Nueva second of Tofibaba district. The next example, same way, critical mass in the early years, 2004-2007, in wireless technologies. We're exploring building capability, supporting students, increasing the number of research students in that area. This led to then the formulation of this wireless mesh network project in the period around 2007 to 2009, and later on then this led to the Broadband for All project, which was piloted in Mpumalanga in Kampala district and part of Limpopo in Kokuna district and Northern Cape. And in that program, 19 village operators, which are really young entrepreneurs, which we took on board, trained, and they are supporting the network connecting schools. The outcome is that 200 schools have been connected in Mpumalanga plus a further 50 schools in Johnstown, Altivo district in Northern Cape. One black SME. The project is ended now, but what we're doing now, we are supporting one black SME, young entrepreneur, coming from Tembisa, very brilliant young man, who will take up the project and support the village operators, and we're looking at rolling out to, getting it, roll out to other districts, in partnership, of course, with relevant state departments, education and telecommunication and postal services, as part of the broadband policy. So this is a model as well that we think can really be a good lesson in terms of how broadband can be rolled out in rural areas, and including the economic value of that in terms of getting a company spun out of that. The advanced fire information system, also in the same context, we build critical mass in an area called geomatics and spatial technologies in the early years. Later on, we saw the development of this breakthrough technology, which is used to as an early warning system to detect fires or wildfires that can potentially damage ESCOM power lines. So ESCOM really, in the initial pilot, used this to support their operations, because in doing this, they are able to proactively, prevent those damages and act on that potential damage as a result of fire. So it's a web-based system with quite a number of breakthrough technologies integrated into that, including satellite technology, Earth observation, and so on. And currently, it's looking at the export market, because there's quite a number of international partners being implemented in Kenya and in Zimbabwe as well. And there's possibility that it can be taken out to Argentina and Uruguay. And what is happening now is there's a spin-out company that is being looked at that can then roll out and will have an economic impact in that respect. For example, potentially, with the application of this technology, ESCOM could save close to 379 million, which could have been lost as a result of damage, as a result of the fire damaging the power lines. MLAB, the minister spoke about it to some extent during the budget board speech. This is one other intervention that we, as a department, we supported in the past three or four years as a technology incubator. Initial partnership with World Bank, InfoDev, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Finland, and Nokia. But now, what we're seeing now is that out of that platform, we're seeing a number of applications that are taken to the market. For example, the Tour 2.0, which is a community tourism mobile application linking with the hospitality industry, well, guest houses and pretending breakfast and so on, and to now provide information on the mobile phone, people can know where to get the nearest, you know, lodging facility or hotel facility and so on. Go Metro supporting the Metro Rail and Houghton Roads and transport. This is a, you know, transport information, traffic information system, or transport information system to be able to tell when is the next bus coming, when is the next train coming, how can you, where can you get it and so on. Also using geolocation. Afros is another spin-out company coming out of this initiative, which also was able to get a Rockefeller grant to develop social impact games used in learning environments. The AfterRobot will be applied an application for the taxi industry. So out of this, we're seeing 12 new enterprises established currently, and this will be added to 16 in the next. In the current financial year, but more than that, 100 enterprises, developers, in terms of young aspirant developers wanting to enter into application development, especially in the mobile, get the opportunity to be trained. They, you know, get they also participate in some competitions where then they can be incentivized to grow their skill further. And also come with innovative applications. Other key initiatives in conclusion that we have really embarked on, I spoke about the general budget support. This project will be looking at implementing projects to support government outcomes, in particular outcome 4, decent employment, and outcome 12, for development of, for the enhancement of public service, that is service delivery. So we're seeing projects coming out of that will include media youth employment. So a number of youth will be affected from that. Where we're using now the IPTV, in other words, taking the cell phone to really access the TV content. You know, it's a problem with broadband that cannot get real quality picture, or otherwise there will be buffering. You have, you know, the video being interrupted. So there's a novel technology that was developed at CSIR that enable people to see that continuous movement on the mobile platform. And this will help young entrepreneurs in the media space to develop their own content, their own movies or whatever, you know, content that can then help create jobs. It will support mHealth, disaster management, as well as human language technology. Also from Operation Pakisa, with their collaboration, 50 million rand was sourced over 5 years to support oceans and coast information system. The high performance computing, my colleague will talk more about that later. We'll look at, some of our students really did well at the international level. They won the competition for building a computing class at this supercomputer. They participated in an international competition over the past, I think it was 2012 and 2013, where they won the competition. So we do have those kind of high-level skills in the country. National Cyber Security Agenda, we play a key role in that space with another unit at CSIR, where we're building R&D capacity in the space of biometrics, smart card IDs. And we're already having traction with the Department of Home Affairs in terms of enhancing their e-passport initiative. We're looking also at e-driver's license and so on. We have licensed a biometric access control system to an SME company called iPulse that is implementing this at the Innovation Hub, where a novel fingerprint processing technology was developed in-house in South Africa as a CSIR using, state-of-the-art algorithms. So a company is piloting that now in one of our government facilities, which is the Innovation Hub. data science skills building capability around how we can take advantage of these big data opportunities that are now a current trend in the ICT space. So intensive intention program, we get students from previously disadvantaged universities, University of Limpopo, Walter Sisulu University. They are coming on a regular basis. So they will be starting this June during their break. They get intense training in this space to help us, you know, get into this issue, this area of data analytics, visualization, and we're already looking at how we can use these tools to support, you know, government policy, how we get the analysis of our different policies, implementations, and the outputs and the outcomes, and so that we can make better informed decisions. So we think exciting work coming out of that space as well. And in the next 3 years, Honorable Chair, we'll be looking at enhancing the IPTV industry. I spoke about this, that mobile TV. I spoke about this is what it means. Spin-out companies from the advanced fire information system is now advanced. We have a company that will be spun out of that that can go to the market. Foreign direct investment in R&D over the next 3 years from IBM that will really see a number of impactful initiatives coming out of that. Decision support provided to a number of departments, Department of Health, Environmental Affairs, Rural Development, and so on. R&D that will enhance industrial competitiveness. We're looking at strengthening our partnerships with state-owned companies like Transnet, Eskom, coming with these new smart technologies that can support the logistics, can support the smart grid, and also, you know, working with our ICT companies like Centec in that space. Agriculture extension services, which will impact on rural farmers and emerging farmers for that matter, and also performance of SMEs, which will be improved through some technology interventions. And with that, I thank you. I'll hand over to my colleague.
Well, just been changing it. We've been joined by two other members. At the back there we've got the Honorable Janita Teplanki. And on the other side we've got a youth leader, a very young person by the name of Honorable Pule Margaret. You saw you can't communicate. You wanted to make sure we made a mistake, we didn't comment our communication strategies, but we forgot that we're the youth. So we are looking for a place to connect with Gadget because he wants to communicate. He wants to have extra communication. He's new in the committee, but we'll tell you what is it all about. So you can go on there.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Thank you also for the opportunity to make a presentation on the infrastructure. The infrastructure is really an enabler to what my colleague Isaac presented. So they could have done more beautiful things with applying the infrastructure. So I'll present you this enabling environment that underpins actually the portfolio we just presented. I think I would like to start with just giving a little orientation on what is the cyber infrastructure, or you also find in literature in some countries they refer to as e-infrastructure. So Americans talk about cyber infrastructure and Europe talks about e-infrastructure, so it's the same thing now. So I think I like this particular extract here for saying that new age has gone in scientific and engineering research, pushed by continuing progress in computing, information and communication technology, and pulled by extending complexity, scope and scale of today's challenges in the field of molecular science, weather and climate, forecasting, health, geosciences, astronomy, and the Internet of Things. And it's this capacity of the technology as cross-threshold that make possible a comprehensive cyber infrastructure on which both new types of scientific and engineering knowledge, environments and observations, and to pursue research in new ways and increase efficiency. So what it basically says here is that cyber infrastructure, e-infrastructure, is basically a computing information and communication technology-based infrastructure. So that's the context in which we will then make the presentation. The question now is why, what's the importance of infrastructure or with infrastructure, cyber infrastructure as part of that, is to say that the infrastructure is basically this at the center of what we refer to now as the knowledge triangle, which speaks about education, research, and innovation. Saying that to truly be competitive in our knowledge economy, or make that transition, one must be competitive at both producing the knowledge through the research, and then diffusing this outputs from the research to our education system, and then applying the research output and the knowledge that we gain to really drive the innovation in the country. Secondly, is to say what's the economic impact of the research infrastructure, again including the cyber infrastructure. It's first of all to say that it's really improving or can improve the performance of an existing business, and I think we can actually plug in here the SKA is a very interesting example where all these five things when you highlight here is a very good example of to improve the performance of an existing business. They're improving the public policy and public services, and you can check research and development investment from global businesses. Again, to say the SKA is a really good example of that. Creating new businesses, sometimes on the periphery of the main driving business, smaller business can be established. And then lastly, also delivering highly skilled people to the labor market. So that's all some things that really have economic impact by establishing research infrastructures. So the DST, relying on the importance of ICT-based infrastructure, and then as far back as 2016, made some policy decisions to invest in cyber infrastructure through the establishment of the South African National Research Education Research Network, the SANREN, as well as the Center for High Performance Computing, or the CHPC, and then the youngest one of the three now, the recently developed one, is their intensive research initiative of South Africa initially, which is called the Very Large Database. And then also you see on the left is the ICT roadmap, which was released, approved a few years ago, which my colleague just spoke about. So at the moment, when you speak about the cyber infrastructure components within the DST or in the country, driving the research agenda, we talk about the communications network, which is through the SANREN. The Center for High Performance Computing is responsible for the high process, processing capability of the country. Then data storage and data management through the RISA, and then the grid is a smaller component of that, connecting different activities around the country. So what I want to do now is just to give a little bit of an overview in terms of what it is and the impact of different components of the cyber infrastructure. And I'll start with the SANREN, South African National Research Network. Again, the orientation in the block in the middle of the figure is just to give an orientation when we talk about where SANREN sits in a hierarchical way. You normally have the university arrangement of computers or clusters. Then you have at the more national level or region level, and then you have the national. So we even have in South Africa a regional one, but we go from the campus arrangement to a national, which is normally the NREN, collectively referred to. So what have we, in terms of the investment in the communication network through SANREN, significant investment over the last few years now, the 10 years this year, to the order of about almost 1 billion rand just for rolling out the funding, and that's excluding the 600 million rand which was invested by the department in acquiring international capacity through the West Africa Cable system. And also in 2010, there's a little bit of a spike there because that was the year when we connected the Meerkat for the site in Carnarvon, SK7 at that time, but Meerkat SKA, as well as the SALT site as the two big science projects of the country. What this investment translated into was a national backbone network, which is indicated on this slide here. The thick lines is basically the national backbone, which connects all the main metros of the country, and it's carrying a capacity of about 10 gigabits per second. That's sort of the way speed is measured, or the capacity is measured on that. And then you'll see also that the two Bitcoin projects, SALT and SKA, being connected also to the same level of capacity, and then some smaller links to the side, the thinner lines, which varies also from 1 to 10 gigabits per second, and some points of presence. Now, give you a different one. So this is what it translated into in terms of the network that's connecting now the different universities and science council and national facilities. So you can see now, in terms of what it translates into the network in distance, about 1,100 kilometers of dark fiber. That is, owns a network, and then about 3,500 of managed bandwidth. That's the national backbone. That's the capacity that we're leasing from Telkom through a 20-year arrangement. Probably to make it a little more, to go to the next level, what it means, if you look at, that was a global picture on a country level. If you look at the natural level, it's more complicated. It's more complicated network. If you look, it's more particular, like Cape Town, you see, it's a ring now with a lot of links going into all different places, connecting the different universities and institutions within that. So on the global scale, it's very simple, but... This is representing actually all the main provinces or metros where we have the links now. So, for example, if you see on your right, it's this Western Cape. It's more like Cape Town, where there's a ring indicated there, some satellites. And then you go also to the other provinces like Gauteng and Northwest. We have a presence in all of these now. So this is again a country map within the metros, giving them a lot of more detail around what happened in terms of the network within that space now. In terms of the impact that, of the network that was established over the last 10 years, it's a research network, so it's not competing with the commercial the suppliers now. So we're connecting the universities, the science councils, national facilities, and also other public research performing institutions. And up to date, 204 sites have been connected through this network. And the other impact that in terms of cost now was that the cost for internet costs have been reduced almost by a factor of 10. And just to give you an idea of how that translates into rates and cents now, because before 10, the Sunrend, we paid about almost 24,000 rand for 1 megabit per second per month. And now with Sunrend, it's almost 1,000 for 10 gigabits per second, which is almost a factor of 1,000 more in terms of capacity. You almost pay half of that amount. So can you see the impact of that? In terms of international connectivity, the impact is even higher, from 52,000 rand in 2001 to about 1,000 rand in 2015. The Sunrend again, in terms of the students have access to the network, more than 1 million researchers and students, academics have access to that network. And it also was a very key investment for the country, because it helped to secure the bid of the SKA. And now it enables the South Africa to participate in global projects, and providing also points of presence for those outside the mandate of the DST now, but it provides points of presence for clusters of schools or colleges that can be connected to the network. At a very high level, we say that it's providing equal opportunities and access, both in terms of quality of education and training, as well as for competitive research. What does this mean? That a student at UCT on the mountain have exactly the same access as a student at Venda, which is such very deep rural, to access very large science projects like the one in Switzerland, or just the SKA, or that. So in terms of leveling that the playing field between rural as well as urban universities in terms of using the network to do good science and presenting or delivering this education project. But the network itself is an infrastructure, so it cannot be a means in itself, so therefore we're also looking at the services that's built on top of the network. And I just want to cite a few examples of the services that's built on top of that network. The first one is the, what we call the EduRoam, which is a free internet access that's provided for researchers. Wherever you go into in the world and into a research institution or university, you open up your computer, then EduRoam will pop up and you can just log on to that for free as part of the consortium. Then there's also the computer security incident response team, which actually is a service that's built on the network to make sure that the network does not abuse and some damage caused to the network. Then the third one is called the performance-focused service-oriented network monitoring architecture persona. Network is again to measure the performance of the network on an ongoing basis. And I would like the next slide will actually show a good story example where South Africa, like the picture shows that South Africa is part of a global network with that red coloring, I mean, showing the global presence of this persona network. And a good story I want to tell here is that there was a problem with the NASA, the American National Aeronautics Space Agency now, network, and a node in South Africa, which is part of the persona, actually pick up the problem in the NASA network, and they actually congratulated, because you can see in red there, they're saying that in South Africa the problem was picked up, and they say it's hard to say how much time, money, and effort was saved with persona. It is now much easier to identify and isolate network problems like the one experienced now. So we're part of a global footprint through this investment we make in South Africa. However, we need to communicate with the global world now in terms of the large size projects, so we have a good international system, but we also have to have communication with the outside world, and therefore investment that we made in the international connectivity through investment on the West Africa cable system. On the East Coast, the universities form a consortium to buy capacity on the East Coast, but you need to have redundancy, because if there's a break on the cable on the East Coast, then actually have been grinds to a halt now, so therefore there was a need for redundancy on the West Coast, and that's where the department made that investment through the West Coast cable and through the broadband infraco. That is, the Sunrain or the communications network. In terms of the high performance computing, which is the country's high performance computing capability, the Student Center of High Performance Computing again, a significant investment to almost 6,040 million over the last few years now, this year, to establish a national tier one facility located in Rosebank here in Cape Town. What the facility offers is again a good computing capability. The capability expressed in teraflops, which is floating points operations per second. You can probably Google that to see what it is, teraflop is. The story goes like, if a teraflop we're working towards now is that if you take the U.S. with 300 million people and you take 66 million of the U.S. Population and they all flip a switch at the same time, that's almost the order of magnitude how fast a teraflop machine will operate now. So it's sometimes difficult even to comprehend the numbers that we're talking about here. But so the system is working very well because the facility is operating at over 80% efficiency, 700 users per year, and a good track record being built over the years in terms of the knowledge output, in terms of the publications, about 350 publications produced since establishment in 2007. And also in the space of student training, about 74 postgraduate student master's and PhDs being trained at the facility using the capability there. Again, it's been a reference, a good story to that was run in the Mail and Guardian recently, last month, was that South Africa now officially joined the large hydrogen collider in CERN, this big physics experiment in CERN, as one of the sort of the data nodes. Or because the data that generated at CERN is normally distributed across the globe with different nodes, different countries offer their services, in South Africa being one of those notes where the data from SEN is processing South Africa, quite to South Africa, and researchers across the globe can use that. So at the moment, at the node that down in Rosebank, they process about 1,600 jobs per day through for the SEN data that's generated. So South Africa is one of this elite group of 175 sites. As a second tier note, and I'll probably later on say why it's important to make this reference again. Again, the story that my colleague referred to earlier in terms of human capital development, we have to develop the young minds, the undergraduates in terms of high performance computing. It's important for driving the ICT roadmap interventions, for example, and therefore we have this competition that in the middle of the year we bring all undergraduate students in the area of computer science to a workshop where they train in high performance computing. A few teams are selected and then they compete at the end of the year in a national competition to select the national winners, and then those winners are then sent to or compete in the international competition where countries like America, China, where really leaders in the high performance computing are competing now. And the good story again is that in both in 2013 and 2014, South African teams for the 2013 was actually the first time South Africa was entering this competition, and the students won the competition. And last year they went back and they won the competition again. It was a very good story because China and the U.S. growing up with this as from the small age now, here's South African team, which is the first time being exposed to this kind of activity, one of the international competitions, so it's a huge achievement for that. And then companies, the private companies like Dell, bought into this now because they actually sponsored the process is that once the national team is elected, then Dell will sponsor the Israeli team to go for a week to the U.S. to be trained and prepared for the competition. And so they sponsor all the costs and provide them all the equipment that they need. And now Dell also had to come on board through the equity equivalent deal investment now to put down a 20 million rand aside now to establish an academy where these young minds that run the competition now actually will be further trained to become innovators, and they plan to establish about 10 companies over the next 10 years. We also have the participation of industry in the CHPC and the different activities that are supported by the CHPC. I think the important thing of high performance computing is that it really reduces the time for prototyping. Like the example cited here, Boeing had reduced, instead of going to 77 iterations now, they reduced to 7 in order to get a good prototype for the system. Here's a South African example of the application of HPC in industry. In Port Elizabeth, there was the Transnet want to have, it's a windy, very windy city, so they want to position their building for Transnet so that it's safe for the staff, and also we can withstand the strong wind. So they used actually high performance computing to do simulation on the wind, how the wind will affect the different parts of the building. So this is again a good example where we actually, in real life example, whose computing was employed to make this decision. The last one in the range of the components of cyber infrastructure was the data component. We started also a few years ago, and there's a small infrastructure that's present there. But again, it's having impact because it provides services to the climate change modeling, to the Earth observation, as well as another site for NASA's astronomy data. A good local example is that a group at UCT, now the Fortis Key Hospital, actually used the portal, the data storage facility, to archive, to store images on rheumatic heart disease in children now, so that other doctors can use that image now so to start the whole issue, the whole process of telemedicine in the country. What we've done over the last 6 or 10 years was to develop these different components individually, but now in order to have sustainability of all these three components I just mentioned now, the department felt that given the fact there are synergies and overlap between some of these components, your networks, your computing, and your data, is to bring them into a more integrated system. So the minister and commissioned a team 2 years ago to come up with a plan and a blueprint how we can integrate these different components. And that was done by a process which we call an investment will result into the formation of a national integrated cyber infrastructure system, which will then be the guiding the tier one facilities of the country. And it's based on the few general principles of the joint planning, good governance, visibility, sustainability, and constructive stakeholder engagement. The key recommendations that we will pursue in terms of establishing that this national integrated cyber infrastructure system being now it will all the components will be integrated into a one institutional platform. With the skills component, what is the missing one, and we'll introduce that one. There will also be a greater form of stakeholder participation, and then we will work through a tiered system now where from tier in the national system, the universities, as well as in some cases even individual institutions will participate in that system. So in a pictorial way, how it will look like is basically to say we have the three components, computing, networks, and data, with some cross-cutting services and applications on top of that. The reason now, as I said, the youngest of the 3 months dealing with the big data is basically to say that how do we manage the data in a more sustainable way throughout the system, and that is which is showing the different applications or components of data that the portfolio that we will drive. But again, the infrastructure cannot be again standalone now. It will need to also serve as other things. A parallel process that we're doing in the department is the development of the South African Research Infrastructure Roadmap, which articulates six thematic areas in different areas of science. But it's important that all of those areas will need some form of e-infrastructure that will support them. And this again, with the application of these, the development of the infrastructure will play an important role. Our last two slides or so will again, I mean, this remind us to say that, I mean, we remind that the data is really taking off now, and how is South Africa positioning itself to approach this, or position itself to respond to this data tsunami that is really slowly approaching us through the SKA and other big initiatives. I think it, as a precursor, we would like to say that it's important to note that data transmission is very expensive. So you would like to have most of the time data on site processing where possible, and also to note that data science is a multidisciplinary activity, and therefore a lot of things have to be taken into account in order to do that. What we're doing already in the department, currently on the ground, we established the data initiative, the tier one facility for data management, data storage. The department invests 120 million rand over the next 4 years in that to expand it. That's apart from the networks and the HPC that's already supported at 200 million a year. South Africa has also been elected to the HPC as a consortium member on the science data processing of the SKE project, one of the international partners, to develop a data distribution model, actually, and the high performance computing, as well as to establish South Africa probably as a tier one data processing node in it. The HPC also already prototyping the transmission of the data from the SCAT 7, that's the precursor, the latest addition now in Carnarvon, to see how the data is transformed from Carnarvon to Cape Town, and how we can build in a model for when to upscale to the Meerkat and the SKA later on. Then the HPC is also, as I noted earlier, it's a member of the CERN collaboration, and that will help us because the model that CERN uses is to have a distributed model. You have a tier one facility and then smaller nodes where the data is stored now. So through this exercise, the CHPC in South Africa will actually learn to develop a data model for the SKA. We identified already regional tier two data intensive research initiative. The University of Cape City and UWC is driving an initiative in astronomy. Then some universities already started programs in data science. So apply to the newly established university, the first university actually in the country of a data science undergraduate degree program. Then we also have international partners helping South Africa to really develop this capability, and also in this area of the data transmission, as well as making sure that we have a good low consolidate that through the establishment of a more sustainable structure to the Nikkei, as well as, and that will help South Africa to really position itself as a global player in privacy computing, but also responding to the big data projects that we listed earlier. So with that, Chairperson and members, I'd like to say thank you.
In that last slide, what I think is that you are moving away. No, thank you very much, Daniel and Isaac. There's going to be questions. The members are going to be interrogating you. Members, that's the presentation. We don't have to go into detail. Maybe for the new members. But what we forget is that this is where dynamism of the world is coming from. And in fact, now they were talking to us about research and development in ICT and the cyber infrastructure. But what you didn't talk about is the cyber crime that goes with the cyber infrastructure. So maybe that will come later. So they were giving us information, and it's very interesting that we seem to be moving like the other countries, though as far as resources, we're still not competing quite well with the other countries that are having the same GDP as ours, which is something that we've noticed even in the other things. Yet, and we always forget that when we talk science and technology, it's not a question of transforming the country because we had apartheid, now we want to transform to a democratic dispensation. But science and technology is always transforming. Whether there was apartheid or there was no apartheid, it's always transformation. They are always big, innovative, formulating new things. But it's interesting. We're going quite well as a department, but there are certain challenges that we've got to look at as members of parliament or as the people who are leading the country. Mm-hmm. Members, that is the presentation, so you can even honorable people here, please to ask questions too. Especially that they're talking about information technology as far as government is concerned. But I know most of the politicians still don't understand that this is the part of technology and innovation that they should use for their politicking. This is very important for their politics, but they don't know that, especially when they're talking about the youth, that you want to make sure that they understand your party and they vote for you. If you use this, and you should teach the politicians when they go for elections that they must use information technology. I think this person was talking, was giving a lecture on the, I think, was it last week or the other week, we were giving a lecture which was led by the Carbon Lake Foundation. He talked about information technology, that we can't continue being tyrants and leading people from centrally with the information technology that we have. We've got to be part of that information technology and move with the others who are going to be left behind. If you think that you can keep the young ones with the knowledge that you want to give them, but they get the information from this infrastructure that we're talking about and this information technology. Remember you noticed the first time that I saw was from Pule. Mm-hmm. You can see that he's from the youth. He knows what information technology is all about. This is the future. Okay. Remember, okay, you can start with it. Okay. Honorable.
talk of wireless technologies, about this young person who was already operating in some 19 villages, Khalishiv and all of that. I'm trying to check if there is any thought to link this with what government is already doing on the telecommunication side, especially on lowering the cost to communicate, because that also talks to lowering data costs, because many of our people are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all of those things. Now, if there are some innovative ways to build on wireless technology, which effectively transmit a lot of data, are we looking at creating a linkage? Because quite often, Chair, you find that government in various facets is doing different things which are not necessarily talking to one another. So, and what happens is that efforts are then duplicated. Whereas if there is some integrated planning of sorts, it allows us to see an impact, so that the complete material stand up and just say, yeah, Tuba. But we are saying Tuba isn't on the planet. They are not in one pool. That is my first question. The second one is on slide number 11. I like the idea of mobile-based television, because it's a growing thing, you know. When the Chinese saw space in this country, the first thing they started doing, especially the mobile space, they first created cell phones with two SIM cards. And the next thing, they created phones that had TV, that the person only visually could see was yourself. So imagine there's a way, actually. So out of that, they were to tap into a different market. Now here, now we're talking about the whole notion of digital terrestrial television, which is supposed to be rolled out. I think there was a policy, the DCT policy, that has been approved. So are we actually looking at tapping into some of those things? I'll tell you what the worry is. The worry is that we can create these technologies that either create mobile televisions and all of that, and not have content to show in those things. Now, when we create, again, the question of linkage, because there is DCT on the one side. Now, when you want to create a mobile-based television, have you thought that already government is rolling out a strategy, a broadband strategy that talks to digital territorial television? You know, so that at least we can say to our people through science and technology, and it will also make sure that some of the channels available, because DCT will effectively make sure that the UK now has more channels than it currently has. Now, we need to be saying, from this perspective, saying that we can create a platform that ensures that some of this platform, some of this, especially, what is the Parliament channel, 408, say 408 is also available on that, because otherwise, you know, we at least, you know, even Bandung education, one of the things we did right is that even schools in Palabura had laboratories. But I can't tell you what I learned in those labs when I was growing up. All I knew is that during a science class, we all needed to go to a lab. So what I'm trying to persuade the committee to look at is that the things we do as well should be able to fit into the strategic thrust of what the government is currently doing. There is an ICT strategy. We talk to our broadband plan. Let's make sure that also there's a linkage. Perhaps they can clarify us on that one as well. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, there was an innovation that was done by Usana. She invited, without our consent, she invited communication to be part of us. Yeah. It was her innovation, but unfortunately they couldn't come, because we thought they were important as far as this one is going, the portfolio committee for innovation. Now, thank you very much. It's as if you are not new to the committee. Maybe they started with the right platform, so that you could be interested in the committee. I think in addition to what you're saying, there's a problem in South Africa, which we're looking at the infrastructure, Daniel, that you're showing. that the hospital in Gauteng, all my ladies are having a problem there. I'll move from Eastern Cape and go to Gauteng and say I'm staying in Alexander, in her place, because I think that the health services are better there when I'm sick. And I'll register as if I'm from Gauteng, yet I'm from Eastern Cape, because there's no information that can go there. Yet, if you've got a good infrastructure in those areas, you might find that the specialist in Joburg, in Bara, could actually see my condition and make a diagnosis and actually tell them what to give me while I'm there, so that I don't have to go to Joburg. I don't have to fly in Parakonath Hospital. So it could help in this episode of people moving from the Pope or from Eastern Cape to these better places. But maybe, I think it's part of what, especially when you talk about laboratories and universities, but I'm worried, and I'm going to ask him outside, was he born during apartheid or was he born after apartheid? Because he's still too young to have been born during that time of apartheid. He's too young. I'm talking about the member. The member himself is too young to have been born during apartheid. Okay. Dr. Matel?
No, thanks very much. You know, when you say he's too young to have been born, then you make him feel very good, because he's on the last leg of his youth years. Oh, fire. Oh, yeah, I remember I didn't do it. Okay. But there is the issue of the fiber and the things that we are doing. If you look at you listen, you then sometimes come to understand, oh, yeah, that's why we'll have a problem of going anywhere. Because you look at the 200 villages or the 20 schools, the Mpumalanga, Limpopo arrangement, you see that there are no more memorials. Because it doesn't seem like we are, or maybe probably it raises the question of why did we not handle this thing of the new form of communication, like included this Vodacom, MTN. Probably we should have done what we have done with Telkom. Because as we do the infrastructure for us, when you look at the infrastructure map that you showed there, Adams, you can see that yeah, it's very good, you must commend it, but it's urban biased. You know, the rural people are going through very serious difficulties. And the effort to try and deal with that imbalance is falling short. Because you know, if you go and get your small SMEs to go and connect a school here, a clinic or something there, because in the main, if you try and understand who is this, what is this small SME, it's really small SME with no capacity to do anything except maybe to have a bar key and some screwdriver, and that's it. So you will never resolve this problem because it's a knee-jerk type of an approach. Probably, you know, if we were to nationalize, this is something that we must nationalize and the state take the lead in providing the necessary infrastructure, because in the meanwhile, it will be for sustainability. It will not necessarily be directed by profit making, because if you look at the vastness of our rural areas, predominantly majority of our people stay in the rural areas, and the infrastructure there, it will be very expensive, of course, to dig each village and put fiber optic, but wireless infrastructure might be the option to take. It's a comment, a question at the same time, Chair. But it's a very, very interesting area. You see, if we can get this right, our economy, the sky will be the limit in terms of growth and opportunities being opened up, because the ability to communicate is a bottleneck to economic growth. Thank you.
Thanks very much for those questions. And in fact, this was going to be the comment that was going to come from Honorable Kathy. She said, coming from that province, that is the smallest, has got the smallest population, but the biggest geographically. And this doesn't
change at all. Actually, without coming in while, because I don't know what is the order in this committee, but in agriculture, if there's a new thing we think about, we can interject the chair now and then. So now I'm saying to Honorable Matale that when he talks about the nationalized rollout of a fiber network, which is a very interesting side of strategy that perhaps the youth Comrade Matale must look at pursuing. Because even the cost of e-tolls, some of those headline costs that makes it higher, is actually the financing of the networking costs. So you could imagine if the fiber was a state-owned fiber, you would actually reduce some of the things you do there. So you'd effectively create less flexibility for your own citizens. I felt that in supporting the points he has made, that is also another thing. It's a big contributor to development.
No, in this portfolio committee, you could do that, there's no problem, especially the youth. Mohammed Dawood. So the president was following me and what thing. So you don't follow him on that one. Don't follow him on the road. Unless he's got a hands-free game. But I agree with that one. I saw only those two hands. I'm not sure. Okay. Malin.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think I agree with you with the issue of people going to housing and lying. But it also happens in education. You know, you find kids registering they do that just to get the books and stuff and then go back. I think that's the problem that you're having. But secondly, I welcome the innovation by Shanaz, but I think there is a need for a joint committee between ourselves, communication and telecommunication. You know, I also serve in telecommunication. So yesterday we had a presentation by the department and entities on the ICT, the policy, the proposed policy. And for me, I see, besides DTPS, that DTST should play a major role in the composition of those who are developing that policy, because it's got a lot to do with science and technology also. But I think there needs to be a more stricter and closer collaboration. But also the innovation that you're talking about today, this of going to your doctor in the rural area, but then he can just say that you've got this is the problem is your diagnosis and so. There's young doctors in Soweto and who have some innovation on especially that, including tracking when a person on the issues of the sick leave, because it enables then you as an employer to be able for that and to take and see that this person didn't go to the doctor and yet he applied for sick leave. So and I know that they've been knocking at different doors, and I think their project or their proposal is still there, and nobody's taking it serious much. But moving forward, I just wanted to know on that slide, the first presentation, on the very first one, where it shows the underinvestment on ICT and R&D, where South Africa spends close to 10% of the GDP on ICT goods and services, of which most are imported. So what is it that you can do to turn around to localize these goods that are being imported? And secondly, that 10%, is it enough? What is it supposed to be for it to be enough to compete in the world space? I think the other one, Honorable Matale and Mali, is Honorable Mali and Honorable Matale. This is not agriculture. It's covered me on that one, but the development on the where the slides on other key initiatives, where there's that development in South Africa of some of the cyber issues, are they in patents? Is there intellectual property, the registration thereof, so that then it secures that innovation of that person who I think is the Data Science Skills Initiative. So if they are protected on their innovation, so that it is not like SAFA and that is taken to court by people who have in other interests. But lastly, Chair, is on the, you spoke of Dell coming into space and play with 120 million support and stuff like that. I'm just worried, you know, there's a lot of ICT companies. And for us also to deal with the issues of unemployment, especially of graduates, these companies need to recruit from universities, those who, and you know, they must make them either intense or mentorship in their companies. I know, for instance, EOH does that. It recruits from universities. Last year they had over 6,000 that they've already recruited. So if each and every ICT company does that, we will be able to deal with the issues of unemployment, of especially of graduates. So I just wanted to know how they engage those ICT companies. Thank you.
I think one of the questions that came to from Honorable Matare or a comment was that if I'm misquoting you, that I tell you, you can say, is that one of our challenges is the gap between the rich and the poor. And I think he was trying to say, if this could be done well, even for rural areas, that would have a big dent on the gap between the rich and the poor, if the information technology could be respected. I think what you are mentioning, Honorable Malindi, is what was said by Annelie. I think it was the last presentation where the question that was coming from Annelie, it was still she was asking the department, I'm not sure if I'm putting it right, Annelie, but you were, my analysis was that you were saying science and technology seems to be cutting across all the departments. Now, when it comes to making sure who must answer questions, is it the Department of Science, or do you go to the other? Because you can end up in a situation where the other one is going to blame the other one, and you end up not knowing who must be responsible, who accounts for the thing. And I think the sooner that happens, where we know where science and technology fits in, the easier for us to say, it's this department that goes with this connection that there should be integration within this department. But one thing that we've got to thank you for is that you are trying to bridge the gap between the private and the public sector, which other departments are not doing well. And then you must keep on trying to connect that, which is the one that we're talking about, trying to reduce the employment. Most of the people who are employed are the private companies, by the way, not the government. So if that gap could be closed between the private and the public sector, it would be better. I think, Annelie, you had your hand up before Janita.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, my questions have been asked, but it's also just to comment on this interdisciplinarity between all the different departments, which makes it very difficult, because I think telecommunications and postal services here have a crucial role to play in terms of broadband, and whatever this department DC is trying to achieve here will be dependent on other departments' functionality and their effectiveness, whether they can deliver on that. So that's a great concern for me. Because for the rest, this looks wonderful, this whole roadmap looks wonderful, but once again, we have the dependence on the effectiveness of other departments. And then also just a great concern in terms of where we are with investment in R&D as a percentage of GDP. We are so far behind, and even more concerning if it is indicated that there's actually a decrease, a regression in this process. So that has to be sorted out.
Maybe that one, it's with us. We've got to try and be your ambassador as far as that one. In fact, it's worse that it's decreasing. We understand the global picture, financial picture, but where is Indra United, or you want to see them? No, you can, we can promote you, you join them. We can promote you, you can sit next to Tanita there, and you'll be promoted to become a member of parliament. Okay, Tanita.
Thank you. I just want to add my voice to what has been said about the connectivity. I mean, it's terrible in the Asia Park. And but I live in a university town or city. I live in Potchefstroom, and I live two blocks away from Potchefstroom University. And I've got almost no signal at my house. So, I mean, I don't understand this map. And I don't understand how it can be said that they should... So my husband is a researcher, so maybe I should get him logged into the system and then we would have signal or something. I mean, at least he would have signal. So, but there's a huge problem because what I'm seeing here is that we should have better broadband everywhere. It's supposed to be like that. Or maybe I'm misunderstanding it because I'm blonde. But somewhere there's a disconnect between what is supposed to happen and what is happening on the ground. Because even us as MPs are struggling with connectivity everywhere. And I spoke to Anli, and she's in Bloemfontein, and I saw that Bloemfontein was blue and a hub there, and she doesn't have internet and she's in her constituency. So that's an issue. And then I'm very glad that I saw the word data tsunami, because that was what I was getting at when I was referring to it at in the budget vote. I still maintain, and I'm glad to see here that there's teaching and training programs. I still maintain that we won't be ready, and we won't be ready soon enough for the SKA, and that we won't have enough money, because Mr. Adams, you refer to the fact yourself that it's very expensive, and this data is, I think we have a once in a lifetime opportunity with the SKA, and we are going to find ourselves hugely underfunded in this department, because, and I'm going to say it straight, because of a trillion deal, nuclear deal with Russia. That money should have gone to the SKA and to train people to do this data tsunami and to create jobs. And I'm very straightforward about it. This is the truth, and this is what should go out there. Because what we are going to see, and in 5 years' time, I'm going to be proven right. And I hope I will still be here to see it happen. And I hope that somehow I hope that I will be proven wrong. Because if I'm proven wrong, it means that the country will succeed. If I'm proven wrong, it means that someone would have clicked that we can't spend that amount of money on nuclear power, that we need to spend it on the higher education institutions to get these people to do this analysis of it, like you called it, the data tsunami. And I'm so grateful for this word, because I'm going to use it now all the time. Thank you very much for it.
Okay, thank you. So what we usually do, sorry we didn't mention this, you just take down all the information. We have looked at your friends, we thought they were very strong to take everything and keep everything, and then you can respond. Those are the questions. You know, the only one, Janita and Dajewa Tale, that I feel good, even in Pelican Park, you've got problems with your signal there. But the only good thing about staying in those areas, whether Acacia or Laboria or that, is that you never have the, what do you call it, the slow setting. You do. But in Pelican Park, you never have slow setting.
Oh, you have?
Oh, I never had it.
We have
bright
news.
No, you only
see it on TV. It's spoken about on SMS.
We've got crime, we've got love city, we like South Africa. No, we like South Africa. We like the rest of South Africa.
Mind you, one can only do 3 days, so
means you are more, you are very well advanced. On a light note, but yeah, that is the situation. So the innovation, if you take the wireless mesh network for example, is to say what are the alternatives. If we have that capability in our research institutions or in the university, they come up with that technology. And then what is the model of taking it up? Maybe it's cheaper, it's more affordable if we use that model, because wireless mesh is about community network. But the challenge with the wireless mesh is because it is using the Wi-Fi standard. So it's not using the MTN or Vodacom standard, the cellular network standard. It's using a different standard, but what we innovated on is to say we build these nodes in the village, provided we can have a backbone, say from Telkom or Broadband Interco or Neotel or even the mobile ones, that lands in that village with a big pipe, it can be a fiber. Then when you have that, we call it a point of presence. The wireless is able to take that and connect the schools and the homes and everything. That is the innovation that was ideally this thing. Currently we use Sanren, and Sanren is the biggest network in terms of capacity in the country. So no other provider has that capacity. So if we have that kind of capacity, it lands in one village. You can simply then, using the wireless mesh, connect all the homes in that village, and people will have a video that doesn't break when you're in it, whether you're in Parliament on your mobile phone. And that comes to the question again, Honorable Mabe, that how do we generate content and so on. It's really about the platform. This technology is enabling, even while you're having GPRS or Edge, it's enabling the picture. Not a good quality that you have on your plasma screens or so, or LED screen, but at least to have a picture that doesn't break. That is the innovation around this area of the mobile IPTV. And it's to really address those areas where there's neglect because they don't have those high-speed networks like 4G or fiber. So what do we do? Do we continue to exclude them or do we give them alternatives? So that's an alternative there. Innovation was about how you compress and come with the technology that will enable, so that when that rural person connects and wants to view TV, whatever channel coming from DTT, the new DTT, when it comes to bear, then the people are not excluded. So that is the idea around that. And I think it talks to our involvement in broadband policy, yes, and ICT policy for that matter. We actually working very well with the Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services. We are serving on different steering committees. We make contributions. The current one is still a green paper, I think, mm-hmm. on ICT policy. There is a portion that deals with ICT industrial development, and there's R&D and skills there. That whole part is our role that we play in that policy, because about building R&D capability and then in that process enabling new industries in the same manner that you've seen the examples that I presented earlier. So that is how we interface with them. We have bilateral DG, some DDG level, we meet and contribute. They also recognize the ICT roadmap, because in the broadband policy, that portion on digital opportunity is basically saying the ICT roadmap, as led by DST, will lead that. So it's integrated in that manner. And then, yeah, I think the idea of braking while driving, I think it's to understand the configuration of the mobile network. Cellular network, we've got the base station. So each base station will cover roughly 20 kilometer radius. And that's a fair, that's why it's called cellular. Then the next base station. So sometimes when you are buffering along from one base station to the other, you will experience that. But I think the companies have the technology, although we are not as advanced as the Koreans. Now the Koreans are talking 5G. We are still at 3G telecom, Vodacom, MTN are moving to 4G, but it's not widespread. It's still piloting. But we're getting there. 4G is more stronger, but people are already talking 5G, 5G generation now. So making it more stronger. But I think in terms of breaking Cape Town, it's also the landscape and the buffering, but I think they do have the infrastructure. The challenge is still in the rural areas, and that's why we're trying to still come with this innovation and support TTPS as they roll out the broadband. Maybe that's an alternative. And then the other question. Yeah, when you go down the slope sometimes, because these things work on the different
areas. You know, Chair, we when Korea they say it's five generation. When you are underground, let's say you are in a lift here, like here in Parliament, it cuts. But we once were in Korea, you are in a lift, you talk. You are under the basement. You talk. You are in a channel, the tunnel, train tunnel, long tunnel. You talk. There is no breaking there. Under sea, you talk. So you are on top of a mountain or in a cliff, and you talk. So I am not quite sure whether, maybe I didn't hear you well. My apologies for interjection, Chair. And
you wanted to say something. Another interjection. I think the spirit through which Honorable Makale has started the conversation is very important. Nationalizing the fiber network, because the reason why we have got this, I know that unfortunately we have got a network here that is obstructing us. Yes. So what I wanted to say is that it is just a comment really, that we must do this as a motivation to show that the absence of a fiber network, limited fiber network in this country, makes it impossible to actually have network like when we're in a lift. The reason why Honorable Machale, you have networks in other areas is because they're already running fiber network, and to assist our friends in science and technology, that they also need to make sure that as a lighter note, they buy phones from proper shops, because 4G, 3G, Edge, GPRS doesn't come with the phone. It comes with the cloud. So I'm worried that they are buying phones that already have that. Is that this phone already has 3G? So I'm worried that if it's already coming with the phone, even if we do a fiber network, we might not solve this problem. So that was just my fear.
I think some of the things, they come back to us as members of parliament. So the important thing is just for you to give us information so that we understand it. And it goes back to the same thing that we've been saying, that we might prioritize other departments because we don't understand what goes on in science and technology. We don't know that it's a transformer. So if there's somewhere where we've got to cut budget, we just say something, let's cut from science and technology and give to another department, because we don't understand. If you make us understand what they're doing, then it's going to be easy for us to talk about, to be your ambassadors and talk for you in Parliament.
Thanks, I'm trying to speed up now. The point I was making is, my, you know, if you have an old phone, it's not 4G enabled. Some current phones are 4G enabled. Even if you are in a 4G network, you won't pick it up if your phone is not enabled to do that. So it's an old sort of model that we're still using. It's in the interest of saving money, probably. But the other issue was on the, I think my colleague will talk to the issue around telemedicine, how, you know, a big network can support that and how to enable help in the rural areas and so on, access to health services. The explanation around underinvestment versus other countries and the 10%, why, how do we reverse it? I think what it means that 10% there is 10% of GDP. In other words, if our GDP currently is 4 trillion, 4 trillion, and that's the GDP of South Africa. I'm not sure the exact figure now, but I'm just making an assumption. And it means we're spending around 440 billion rand in ICT R&D. So both private sector and government and universities, when we invest in R&D, we only invest in 40 billion or 400 billion. I'm not sure who's the last zero there. Yeah, that is what it means. Whereas other countries are investing a larger percentage of their GDP in R&D. Hence, I mean, the evidence is there for everyone to see. If you see there are some sounds coming from Korea and LGs and all this, they have research institutes focusing on electronics and communication and ICT. And you are Samsung and you are LG and you are Hyundai and you are Daewoo. Harvest those things. That's why they are dominating our market. And that's why you see their percentage is 3 points. Their percentage spent on R&D, percentage of GDP on R&D is higher. So, and you can say the same with the other. That's what it means. So the hands we're buying, when you say you are the net importer, we're spending 10% of our GDP buying, yeah, that's what it meant actually, buying from outside. If we want to reverse it, it means we have to develop our own local thing and start exporting or consuming our own product. So that is the point it's trying to make. And naturally then we'll progress and then maybe start competing with Europe. Not even Korea, maybe Brazil and Australia and so on. So that is the point we're trying to make with that. Therefore, we need that investment, and Honorable Chair, we know that your commitment to helping us. If we stimulate this investment, maybe as a department we catalyze through our allocation, get more allocation and catalyze it, then we'll get more industry also coming, and then we'll increase the pool, and we can see the step change. Yeah, I think I've got it. Yeah.
Thank you, members. Just chair to the health issue. It's all the things I think that we need to look in as a country. But again. I think this health, I think you're talking about probably a national health repository where the patient data sits, so that, I mean, irrespective where, and it's connected on a national level, so irrespective where you reside in the country, that your data it can be accessed by a doctor in Limpopo, or if you're vacationing in Gauteng, in Victoria, you have to. I mean, the doctor can very easily pull up your data, and so that's. I mean, the way things are going in terms of current medicine. But again, the things that we need to be aware of is, for example, the department. There have all the policies around it. So the Department of Health will have to drive, for example, the policy, because especially when it comes to people's data. The privacy about your medical records and all that. What's the policies around the Department of Health to make it the policies around that now? I mean, the connectivity to your, I think, as you mean, the members or indicated, for the data to be transported or accessed in a rural community, there needs to be good connectivity between, forward to that particular clinic to where the doctor sits or the specialist in an urban environment. Also, the part from the security also, again, because you want that data, your medical records need to be very secure. So the issues around that, to roll that out is it the policy, who's driving the policies, to get good connectivity to that and the secure zone. But that's, I think, where things are going in the world in terms of telemedicine. And I think the example we use now in my presentation, where the UCT is collecting rheumatic fever or heart diseases now and collect on a database, so that a doctor or specialist in anywhere in the country could go to that database and say, but I have a patient here now which x-rays or shows this condition out here. Can I look at the database to see if there's one of the conditions that's articulated today now? But this is some work that needs to be done around security and the connectivity to that. The other thing, honourable members, I need to point out that when the SAMIN as a communications network is very much different from the commercial networks. That's why I'm trying to make the presentation, because our mandate is to carry research data. That means connecting to universities and not, for example, commercial data. Now, commercial data, I mean, for example, as an individual now having your telephone accounts data, for example, cannot be carried on the Sundry network, because it's meant to be carrying research data. Because if we can start carrying, for example, cell phone data, then we're competing with the telecoms which play in that particular space. And the licensing arrangements that are different also. So for the Sundry will play in that particular space, so we're not connecting or carrying cell phone data. That's mainly a research network that Sundry is done. I think that's where I made the distinction between the commercial networks and the Sundry, because it needs to be universities, science councils, and also the research performing institutions. We have, for example, hospitals like Paraguayan Hospital. It's a teaching and training university, or hospital, so they are also a part of the Sundry network. But a hospital in general now, where no research has been conducted, not necessarily be on the network, but we're also providing points of presence. For example, where schools are now, we talk about in the secondary school system, 27,000 schools now. So that's in the space of basic sciences, but the Sundry provides, for example, a point of presence, bring the network to a particular point where a consortium of schools can be connected to that. But that network of schools now is mandated and arranged, supported by the Department of Basic Science, but you can use the traffic, and we are basically building a network within the schools, because that's in a different space. So that's the, and then I also want to say, honourable members, that the Sundry network is not just in the urban, it is in the deep, also in the rural areas, because that's in order to level the playing field, we need to cover the whole geographical arrangement. And we have a partnership with the Department of Higher Education and Training on a project what we call the Rural Campus Connectivity, where the Sundry again will provide, in certain cases, the points of presence, but where you cannot go into a deep rural. An example I want to use is that, for example, Sundry will go up to Makado, but the stretch between Makado and Kiando, where or University of Venda, it's about 50 or so kilometers between the two towns. But to put a fiber network, that was something like 30 million rand. You see, so sometimes it's also cost factor. But what we've done, for example, was to put a radio link between from Makado to University of Venda, which increased actually, because they used to have, I think, their network capacity was something like just 10 megabits per second, and now they have 200. So it's something like a factor of 200-fold increase on their connectivity. And we're rolling out the connectivity to the rural campuses, either where we start in the pathway of the Sundry network, or there's the special links that we make to that now as a partnership between the Department of Higher Education and Training, and they put a couple of million rands into this project, was ongoing, and they're helping the DST to go towards. So it's not just the rural campuses that's being connected. For example, the University of Brain Dead, all the other. It's more the ones that really sit in deep world that we have to take into deeper, where we're still taking time, a little bit of time to go there. But most of the universities, University of Fort Hare, University of Brain Dead, all the main campuses already been, and even satellite campuses of UNISA in the rural areas, all have been connected to the STEM network. In the case also where it's real difficult in the rural areas, we'll take a point of presence to that for the sun network, and then Isaac's wireless mesh will take that as the point of presence and take the wireless mesh from that. So different arrangement, either a radio signal that we use or the wireless mesh project, but it's a combination of Sunray and also other programs that the DST have in order to roll out the network to the universities. And then the question on the Dell support to the undergraduates, the answer is yes, that there are other companies also in this particular area. For example, that Intel and also one of the sponsors of the student, and it's actually the undergraduates where the support is. And now, as I said, the students are very hyped up in winning international competitions now, and the question is right here, how do we know that these students will find employment? And that's why through the Dell Academy now, they actually will train these undergraduate students and employ them as interns to make sure that they will really increase their employability. So it's not as Dell, it's other companies, but it's really speaking into helping the students to increase their employability and to speak into the issue of job creation. Then the concern of the other departments, I think that's a real one, because some departments have the policy mandates to, for example, develop the ICT policy that's outside of DST. But we're making inputs to that, as you indicated, we're making inputs to these policies, but we're not driving the policy at the primary level. The readiness on the SKA, we have to say that, I've highlighted in the presentation a number of interventions already on the ground that we were implementing. But we have to realize that if we talk about data scientists or data analysts, it's a multidisciplinary. So it's people that need to reach, it's statistics, it's mathematics, it's computer science. So you can be a statistician now and eventually become an analyst, or become a mathematician and eventually become a data analyst or computer science students now. Okay. So if you take the collective of all the contributions of that, I think we will be ready. I think the numbers indicate that we'll need between about 150 to 200 data scientists. For example, by when the operations really starts going off now, the data needs to be processed, because up to 2016, 2017, the Meerkat will be under construction. It's only when the system is commissioned now and the data science being collected when these data scientists will be needed now. And with the interventions in place, in our training specific data scientists in Cape Town, we have the consortium of universities, national universities, to set up this unit for training specifically people in the astronomy area, and hoping to produce something like 100 students over the next 5 years. Now, collectively, the program will be able to deliver on what will be required. And I think the important point, Honorable Chair, is that the SKA is a consortium of member countries. So, and if using the distributed model, where there will be a different tiers, so there will be the primary data that we only say directly from the telescopes will be processed at the tier one. There will be only three or four nodes where that will be happening, the data, and then it will be distributed to any number of countries or nodes across the world. And where the data will be processed in that membership country or just a voluntary partner now, that's where the expertise will be needed. So if, for example, if South Africa now position ourselves as a primary node, where then we will need a certain amount of data analysts now here. But if a country like America or so, say that they want to be another prime minister, they will need their own set of data analysts now. So it will be a distributed model where also the skills required will be distributed across. Because we also have to realize, in the case of the SKA, the data will be so voluminous that you cannot, that's why I say the data is expensive and also complicated, because the data will be so voluminous that we have an on-site computer, supercomputer, that as the data is collected from the telescopes, it's processed on-site. There's an underground supercomputer. Because you cannot type the raw data anywhere. It's too much and it's too expensive. So a lot of data will be processed as first level, and then the processed data will be then first, secondly, piped to primary nodes, which will then act as a virtual observatory. So when I look at the data, it seems to me it's coming from that node, that virtual laboratory, and not necessarily from the original experiment. And then the data is then processed at the tier one node, and then distributed to the tier two node. So it's a pool of this expertise with all the instruments, the interventions on the ground. South Africa will be there.
Thanks, Chair. I'm conscious of time, but what I thought I'll do is just the colleagues, I think, have managed to address all of the detailed specific questions in relation to their portfolio. I thought what I'll do is just talk through one or two things at a more strategic level that you raised. The first is, thanks, Chair. I mean, if I'm hearing you correct, and I will take this back to our executive committee, one of the things that you highlighting and challenging us to do is we need to empower the committee to better understand the role of the DSP so that you can then play that kind of effective partnership role. So I've taken that into account and I've raised it. To then address your specific question, let me highlight two things which comes up and may help the committee in exercising strategic oversight and support to the Department of Science and Technology. The first is that the DSP has to be very strategic and smart about where it invests funding in. And the approach we use is where we see opportunities or where we see things where the market is not responding to those challenges, that's when we come in. So as an example, cell phone technology, general cell phone technology, you know, all over the world, you know, Korea, etc., they're advancing this technology. There's very little we can do if we don't have thousands of engineers, etc., to enter into that market. So leave that market to its own devices. And there's a very well-established market-based model. Companies like Vodacom, MTN, etc., they attend the conferences, they partner with the Koreans, etc. They should best understand. If they're not providing the cell phone service that we should be getting, that's where we exercise our market power by moving from one cell phone provider. And they'll get the lesson and they'll upgrade. So the basic issues around general cell phone data is that the cell phone companies are not investing, and this has come up on 702 as an example, are not investing enough in basic infrastructure. The more towers you put up, the less you have this problem of buffering, etc. That's not something that's possible for the DST to get involved in. Because we're not going to compete. There's no rationale for us using public funding for that. However, as Isaac has identified, rural connectivity is neglected. The market will just not invest enough in R&D to deal with the challenges of rural communities. That's the way that they work, because they're looking at what makes sense for them. And it's in that instance where the economists talk about market failure, that's where we come in as the DST. But sometimes where we see market failure or where the market's not responding can eventually become a market of its own, because the market may not be seeing the opportunity now, but they may be able to see it. So for example, on rural connectivity, we're doing the work, but a lot of big enterprises have identified rural connectivity as their big new thing. Google, for example, is talking about putting balloons, you know, thousands of balloons all over the world. There's a company, I'm not too sure what's the name, it's not a famous one, that's looking at putting up a consortium. It is a famous one, it's not Google, it's one of the other big ones, Facebook or someone, putting a consortium of satellites. Because the way they see it is if people get connectivity, they're going to use their services, they're going to use then get the adverts, etc. So even with something like that, we have to be clear that if the market is outpacing us and things are happening and we haven't found a space in that market, maybe the time has come to say, let's stop doing work in those areas or hand it over, etc. So this, I must highlight to the committee, is what we constantly do as DST officials. We constantly look at where is it that's happening, and we have the tools to be able to say, here's the opportunities for all of the areas that we've highlighted, whether it's on ICTs or minerals beneficiation, etc. We're playing that role of getting things, of steering the market towards things we think are potential because our assessment is done, but they haven't yet taken up. And when things change, we change with the times. So that's on the market dominance. And that's why a lot of our work now, we're emphasizing the fact that we can take technologies to a certain extent, and then we need to hand over into companies, etc. Because the companies then must continue doing the R&D to stay relevant. If they don't invest in R&D anymore, they're going to fall by the wayside. And unfortunately, that's how the world progresses, I think, in a sense, where you have to be responsive to your market conditions. So that's on the first area. And we, the stage we're doing a lot of our work is to take it, to de-risk it, to get to a situation where it's ready to be taken up by others. But when it has to be taken up by others, we don't have the money or the resources. Neither do I think we should be given the money or the resources, because then we become a everything to everyone. We have to focus in on getting into that. The second area where we get involved in to understand our role is that's on what I would call the supply side. On the demand side, government is a user of technology. They use technologies in the delivery of health. They use technologies in education. They use technologies in sanitation. They use technologies a whole lot of places. They use techniques like data science, etc. What our role in that instance is to demonstrate to other government departments a different and potentially better way of doing things. But increasingly over the last 3 years, we've said also, we're not going to sit there and say a new technology is necessarily a better technology. We're going to subject that to scientific study. So if we think there's something new, we're not going to just say it's better. So for example, in Copenhagen, we're spending a lot of time on monitoring and evaluation, on collecting the evidence that will show decisively whether it is better or not. Because sometimes technology doesn't have to be better. It might be that the same money can be used differently and you get the same kind of results. Although we believe strongly that the technology can help, you don't start off by saying the technology is the solution. You need to say, can this technology work and how can we make it work best? So in that instance, what we do is we demonstrate or we test in partnership with people, etc. And we don't go very small scale, like one school. So we're saying, you know, one school we can show that it works, but that one school is very unique, particularly they might have a good principal, etc. Can it work at the systems level? And that's why a lot of our demonstrators have moved to what we call large-scale demonstrators, where we cover like 30 schools, so that you get a lot more dynamics to understand, and you take into account a lot more factors. Wireless mesh networks, we did it in a lab, it was successful, we said we needed to test this out in a larger scale. Once we do the large scale demonstrator, the next stage is either extensive rollout, and in that instance we can't get involved. So what we do then is we work with government departments to see how they can then integrate that into their delivery model. So in the case of Copenhagen, we've worked with the Eastern Cape Department to say, how do they budget for it now, how do they make provision for it in their own budgets, etc. And we work very closely with them. So to summarize then, Honorable Chair, even though we have had, this is an ongoing challenge working with other government departments, it's gotten significantly better over the last few years. They've recognized our important role, they have a better sense of what it is, but it's variable. So it depends very much on department to department. There isn't a systematic response. So where we have good relationships, like in human settlements, we get a letter coming to us to say they want to partner with us on something. On education, they want to partner with us on the operation for KISA. In other instances, it's less so. And that's the kind of thing where I think our minister is highlighting that the portfolio committee can play a useful role, that it shouldn't depend on individuals. in those departments to be able to take forward things that come from science and technology. It needs to be systematized. If a government department is not taking something forward, they should then provide reasons to the portfolio committee on why they're not doing that. So that becomes a more systematic way of dealing with this thing of taking stuff that comes from science and technology into other government departments, and we're working on that. But our partnership, because of our approach, has been very, very positive, and nowadays we have so many departments wanting to partner with us. We're sending an SMS to someone who wanted some urgent information, even with provinces. KZN, we're working with them now on funding, etc., because they see the value we add, and we need to take it forward. But we're going to come short if, and this is the last comment I want to make, what we've been able to do has been on an R&D budget that is at 0.75% and the technology development 0.75%. What we've done today strategically is to show that the DSC can deploy those resources in a very strategic way. And that's why we have this whole lot of examples. Now that we have the systems in place, we have systems to identify areas where there's market failure, areas that can improve service delivery. We have the networks now. We have experts in the universities, etc., who are all orientated around it. We now at the position where any new funding that comes in will be used very, very effectively, because you can scale up from 7.75% to 1% to 1.25% to 1.5% to 2%. It doesn't matter, because all we do is we just increase the number of opportunities that we can take advantage of and not the case. And we can work at any level. Any additional funding comes in, we can effectively deploy it to kind of areas. So that now remains our challenge, as well as saying, how can we make sure that where good things are coming from DSC, that they are taking forward, and if they're not being taken forward, that the other forces in our democratic system exert the right pressures to ask, we've heard about this, but why are you not taking forward? Because they may have a very different view that they haven't shared with us. Sometimes it may just not be possible from a standards perspective, from a financial perspective. That's fine. Let's hear those things, because we can then always adapt. Because I have to accept that sometimes technology people don't have a good insight into other dynamics that affect whether a technology is a successful technology or not. But through a good partnership, we can bridge that gap. And I think we're getting there, but there's a long way to go, and we need to strengthen. Then let me end off with two things then. One is on localization. I think I want to thank the chair for raising that. That is a strategic part of our new 5-year strategy. I think when the DG presented the last time, he talked about us making a specific impact on the technology balance of payments as an example. So as we move over the next few years, we're going to the second level of detail. It's not just talking about ICT. It's asking the team, let's unpack what exactly are we importing computers, software, etc., and then ask ourselves, where can we play? Because we have to understand we can't play in all areas. So that's part of the work we're going to be doing as part of our next 5 years, which I think will strengthen us even further. So on an ongoing basis, we'll share with people what we're doing around the localization and crafting opportunities. And finally, I'm sure that the portfolio committee would be requesting briefings ongoing on the square kilometer array. What we will signal is that when the briefing comes, that it's important to address two very specific issues, which I think are legitimate concerns by the portfolio committee, but they need to address this. The one is, what is the kind of, because we've done the studies, but we just don't have the information. What are the measures being taken to ensure that we maximize the benefits of this SKA on communities? Remembering that it is a science and technology project, but where we can make additional benefits, and let's do that, but we can share that with the SKA colleagues if they come to present. And the second one is our readiness and preparedness to deal with everything, not only the engineer, not only the data, but the engineering. So we will share that information, but when you request the briefing, if you can say that these are specific issues, then it helps the colleagues prepare, because they can come with the kind of evidence and information. Dan already has shared this, that, you know, we've identified that we need 200 data scientists. At least we have a number. Now we know. that with 200 data scientists we'd be able to do what it is. Now the question is, what are we doing to prepare to develop those 200 data centers? So the details are there, honorable members, but it may not be that we have it because we're not the right teams, but I'm sure they can share it. So, Chair, I thought I'll just end on those issues, and I will share with the DG in general that the committee was very positive about the kind of impact that we can make with these areas, both, and that you know, we need to just continue having a lot more closer engagements with the committee, and to empower the committee by, you know, exposing it to some of the projects, inviting it to some of the events, and also providing you with the kind of briefing that helps you to work with us to increase the impact that science and technology can make for social and economic development. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. The problem is, but you wanted to ask something, another leader? Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Imran, Isaac, and Daniel. We accept your strategies, we accept what you're doing, though there are still concerns. And I think the main one which actually belongs to us is, do we know our South Africa, and do we know what is important in transforming South Africa? Or are we just continuing with what used to happen? We know the development is very new. It's less than 17 years old. So maybe some of us don't know, and sometimes you make wrong decisions because you don't have information, not because you don't want to do it. And we think that we are unique as South Africa, and we know the private sector is always worried about risk. And the people that are supposed to take this is the government, that is supposed to take this for its own people. They're supposed to take this and give it to them that, look, there's not much to threat. We accept. And the other one is, I think it becomes one of the work that we're doing is to make people accountable. Now, if it's going to be wishy-washy, you don't know whether to make science and technology account or education account, they'll always throw you from one pillar to the other and say, no, it's so-and-so who's supposed to account. But as a portfolio committee, we want to make a specific person to account or a specific development to account. Why is it not happening? So those are some of the things that that are worrying us. But I think some of them, they don't belong to you. They still belong to us to see how we make things happen in that area. So I think the marketing of these things and doing some of the things that you're talking about, even ourselves, we need to help and make sure and make people understand what science and technology is all about, us as public representatives. I think it becomes interesting. It's not only in Canada and Sutherland where sometimes we usually have problems. Our communities, I think we need to change some attitudes even with our communities. You know, if I'm sitting in Tall, in Eastern Cape, and somebody comes up with something that is new, I think it can make me better financially, I hide it from the other people. I keep it to myself and I don't tell them because I want to enrich myself, not knowing that this thing is for everybody. And it happens quite often. I forget that the case is too big and I keep it to myself. Because when we went to Carnarvon in Sutherland, there were certain people that came there to us. I think we're in Sutherland. There were people who came to us and said, this is what's happening being done by NRF and science and technology. But when we met some of the counselors, we found out that they know nothing about what is going on, meaning that somebody has kept the information because they want to enrich themselves. And it's quite common, which is something that, but these are the things that we need to address as public representatives. That when you get something, the cake is too big, let's not try and shelve it for myself and not give up. But it's something that we need to follow up. Why are we not having spin-offs? Because of the SKA that you have this day. Thank you very much for your. We're hoping that we're going to be meeting time and again so that we can answer some. going to be approaching you as political parties so that we can use the technology to use for canvassing for elections. We know the youth is very good in it, so, and it's the youth that is going to lead this country later on. So even ourselves, we need to follow and make sure that we understand what's going on. Thank you very much, members. Thank you very much for the question that you have asked and the information that you have asked from them. Let's go and enjoy ourselves now. I think I'm trying to say the meeting is over. So we'll meet next week. We'll send you SMS. We'll use the same technology. But I'm hoping that we won't send it while you're driving up Rulat. We'll make sure that we send it when you're in there. When he's down here. When he's down here. Okay, thank you very much, members. So we'll meet next week. Thank you, department. But you're coming from rural areas, you should know about this and you should be fighting for the rural areas.
That's right. Kamala is gonna be telling me something about it.
How was all the way of the Puru Baba? No, fortunately, my lady is coming from a hundred before I was here. So, to be strong here, we need to recognize. Maybe my lady is able to go for a good one, but we need to my patients, people coming to help him, and all the big problems.
Yeah. No, I think they're finished.
There's another missing.